SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Greenwich, New York, for at least 48 hours, a very good Monday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Got home almost on the timing we were hoping for. Kind of a strange trip home, but we got here nonetheless and have had an up and down weekend. What do you expect me to say here after last night? A somewhat unsatisfying way to decide an otherwise fabulous season when it comes to the Eagles for me. Congrats to the Chiefs. Got tons of Chief fan friends from my time in Kansas City, but I'll tell you, before I dive into the racing recapping, I'll just say one thing. I'll tie the two things together. I don't ever want to hear, and I think I've said this before on different occasions, I don't ever want to hear only in racing ever again. Only in racing are the surfaces not maintained properly. Only in racing, the stewarding. You get my drift? You play the biggest game of your year of the season, the biggest stage, and you put those whatever 120 players you put them in harm's way on that field. You're not embarrassed that guys are slipping all over the place, that have to change cleats in the middle of the game to get any kind. I mean, and not to mention, why don't you paint the whole field? Why don't you turn the whole field into a giant Jackson Pollock, so that guys can skate all over the place? I mean, the officiating aside, we'll get to that in a second. You're not embarrassed by that? I mean, just ridiculous. It's funny because during the week, during the lead up, I had seen the thing about the Chiefs had played there and they complained about that surface. But then with the spray painted crap all over the place, and guys are falling all over the. What if somebody? Anyway, that alone. If the officiating hadn't interjected itself to the point where it did, that alone would have been enough to indict the NFL. And then, you've had a really good game. I mean, you're tied with 5 minutes left, and that's how you want the season to end. You want to make a ticky-tack call after there's been a physical game played for 55 minutes, and that's the call you make. 58 minutes. So, I mean, all you really want, I mean, at that point, you just, say, all right, you seem, for an instant, all right, they stopped them, all right, field goal, and got a minute and 40 and change with one timeout, let's go tie it or maybe win it. And then they start showing the replay. It's like this is what you that's the call you want to make at that juncture in the game. Amazing, just amazing. So the tie-in is the only in racing. Yeah, okay. The officiating in the NFL has been dreadful you know, off and on all year, and has raised its head. And of course, you know, there's people now really seriously betting on it, legally betting on it. So it's no different than, you know, our stewards and, you know, the frustrations that are expressed. Knock on wood, it feels like we've had a nice stretch here without any steward, you know, screeching. But I don't want to hear only in racing. I mean, a surface that was unplayable, that they would have canceled racing if that surface was in play. And, you know, and then stewarding that, you just shake your head. So, anyway, listen, as I said all the last 2 weeks, just was happy they were playing the last game of the year. And they exceeded expectations for the, you know, you get there, you want to win. And then you get there and you want the players to decide the outcome. And for the most part, they did. But anyway, there's really nothing worse. Thank God it was a great Saturday of racing, because there's nothing worse than waking up. Actually, I slept okay to like almost six yesterday, waiting around 12 hours. I mean, it is an interminable. I don't know if you saw that there was an article somewhere, and they say there's no movement for this, but the concept of playing on Saturday, which should be further examined. That's not such a crazy notion. I know, Super Saturday. I mean, it would take a year or two to adjust to Super Saturday from Super Sunday. So we'll see. Dave Hill is going to visit while it's fresh in everybody's mind. Congratulations to Dave, who played his system, or, you know, his approach uniformly all year, and comes out well ahead. Did a tremendous job. The New York Times should be fabulous, and we'll get Dave's final thoughts. Dive into the weekend, and I'll pick off some of the visitors as we discuss the weekend. The weather started to deteriorate in Tampa, but it didn't seem to affect the surfaces. And as a result, to start with the Sam Davis and the Sun Coast, you know, litigate. We certainly, everybody, I think, you know, kind of thought if he wanted to go for an alternate approach, Todd Pletcher, not a bad place to start, given his seventh annexing of the Sam Davis. No certainty about litigate returning for the Tampa Bay Derby. All possibilities are in play. We're going to talk shortly, actually, excuse me, in the first 20 minutes or so, Don Little Jr. And we talked to Todd last week. I said, you know what, you heard everything you needed to know about litigate from the preparatory side of things with Todd last week. So I reached out to Don Little Jr., who's always a pleasure to visit with. The Blame Colt, Luis Saez, confidently handled and in position to pounce. Some nice prices underneath. And a couple of things that happened in terms of the way everybody approached this race. You had to feel like WHNL, however it's constructed, you just sort of had to feel like you didn't want to accept him at a short price. And, you know, that was the right approach. Ends up eighth here, and Danny Gargan said just throw it out. And there were a couple of horses that failed at shorter odds. We'll get to Caramel Swirl. Basically, you know, coming to Tampa, it's not a place you come to, you know, without a little bit of a feel. I that, wouldn't WNL have been better off staying or, you know, going back up to New York for the Withers? Maybe not, because Hit Show was very good. We will talk to Brad Cox in hour three today. Brad's got a busy morning. And, of course, preparations continue toward Saturday's Risen Star card. And we will we'll certainly glance ahead, I'm sure, because Brad's Brad is he's like a rash all over that card. So we'll probably bring up a few of his runners for the weekend. But the other players in here, excuse me, the other players in here, you know, Prairie Hawk had a bad start. And if you watch the replay, because the horse that we had talked about with Prairie Hawk coming out of that allowance, Groveland ran a solid second in here at 20-1. And you'd like to think, I mean, the company lines that if Prairie Hawk doesn't have that start, you know, he's a horse that likes, you know, that so far in his career has been up and on and near the lead. And instead, Sammy Camacho found himself mired and you know, really he put in that, you knew, you could see him kind of range up. I was kind of watching the, whatever color was an orange cap. I was kind of watching him a little bit. And, yeah, you could see he was going to flatten out, and he did. So this pretty much, I mean, from every, really every step, it felt like Litigate was a winner all the way around. I mean, Luis Saez just consistently riding, for an extended period, and just terrific. So Litigate from, you know, a tricky-ish 11 hole, and you know, found good position, and just looked the winner all the way. Paid 760. We'll get to the big multi-race, multi-track results in a little bit. Classic Car Wash, who was scratched out of that allowance last week at Gulfstream, the Tappet Trice race, good placement by Mark Cassie to move Classic Car Wash over to this spot. It picks up a graded placing in his fourth start for Gary Barber. The other player, Champion's Dream, kind of dropped anchor. And I have to check with Mark about how you know, what transpired there, because notably he was one of the horses coming off Lasix. So kind of ran like that may have come into play. After that, kind of a mild rally from the Art Collector sibling, that Classic Legacy, making the three-year-old debut for Bruce Lunsford and Bill Mott Jr., coming off the maiden win back in December, and that might not have been, they might have hinted at some things yet to come. So, Litigate, the first of the conversations for the 3 3-year-old races, wins the Sam Davis. Earlier, of course, half hour earlier, the Philly race, and this was, in a lot of ways, it's always nice when somebody like Jerry Bennett and local connections, when they stave off the invaders. And Wonder Wheel, who was, you know, kept wide by Tyler Gaffleone, can understand that. You know, didn't run badly, but as a returning spot, she didn't run badly. I think you got to wait and see, as opposed to, you know, the instant condemnation. She pretty much came back and ran a race that was very similar to, you know, the way she ended her two-year-old year. So let's see if she moves forward off that. Mark Cassie, I did see that Cassie said she came back a little tired, so she's sure to get plenty out of it. And then, of course, there was Julia Shining, who is the proverbial bicycle horse. We'll see what Rich Migliori, who, of course, will join us at 10. We'll see what Mig thinks. Julia Shining just ridden and ridden and ridden and ridden and ridden and ridden. Just asked. One of those horses, if you don't ask, you're not going to get anything. But she, you know, she was kind of a grinding third in there. But Dreaming of Snow, a Jess's Dream. Congratulations to Karen Phillip, who bred this horse, Florida bred, out of an old-fashioned mare, Snow Fashion, and was stretching out for the first time around two turns. And that's something that Jerry Bennett does very well. Jerry Bennett does a lot of things well. Top horseman for a long time. And Dreaming of Snow, 38-1. And you know, if you went back and looked at that from a fig standpoint and, you know, trying to project if it wasn't going to be Wonder Wheel, I was quite willing to look for a 20-30-1 shot. And mine was Champagne Calling. If you were looking for a price, she was eligible. She needed to, you know, really step forward, but, you know, she had run, you know, a couple of races, and you didn't know one of those things. You know, first time around two turns, that's a different equation. So big win. And I'm trying to reach Jerry Bennett, and hopefully we'll be joined. The rest of the card was really good and a lot of fun. Sibelius for Jerry O'Dwyer. Looks like he's going to be a very nice older horse. You know, he's five, but he was in hand. Junior Alvarado rode him with tremendous confidence. And just when it looked like he was kind of getting, you know, going to be susceptible late, and they ran. I mean, this 21-2, 43-4, 55-4, a 108-3. Serious performance, 100 buyer. Not his career best. His career best is actually a 106 that he got at Pimlico last year in the Light the Fuse when he sort of announced himself. But he's now got three triple-digit buyers since last summer. And so we'll look forward to talking to Jerry O'Dwyer, who, as you heard from Marty, was kind of loud and proud about Sibelius coming into the card. How about congratulations to Terry Pompey? And this was a very good effort. Jafaros, a Cantheros, and I should mention Sibelius, not this time, bred by Taylor Brothers Properties, Pollock Farm, and Pat Payne. And Hidden Springs bred Jafaros, who Daniel Centeno just had in hand, and when they came at her, she just powered away at 8-1. Congratulations, Terry Pompey, My Purple Haze, who of course we know from, you know, from New York. That's a great win for them. Olivia Darling was trying to get to her to no avail. Caramel Swirl, when I mentioned short prices, 2-5. And I mean, at no point looked like she was going to impact this. She was this was obligatory 2.0, worse. So, and you know, maybe just getting the season started, but wow. I mean, that was not encouraging at the age of five. So we'll see where Godolphin and Belmont, what they want to do next. The rest of the day, a couple of maiden spots. We talked, of course, on Friday about the Tabith sibling. And Tito Mimosa kind of ground one out, six furlongs. But, boy, it looked like Gallardo was, you know, really needing to to hold the Uncle Mo filly together. And he did. I mean, she held off Rosario's Prayer, who was 25-1. And so the Taba sibling, the filly, Yaguata Centurion and Centurion Thoroughbred Racing, didn't go favored. Shug went favored, relay, and was uninvolved. But Tito Mimosa, you got $9. So that was a good start. And then the end of the day, that Juniper's Moon, that was a fun nightcap. And Camacho again, this time for Tony Dutrow and Team Spore. The Fletcher and Carolyn Gray bred Galileo that comes out of their wonderful I'm a Chatterbox. Juniper's Moon breaks the maiden in that nightcap. Fun day of racing at Tampa. The featured card of the day. I'll slip in the Golden Gate. We'll do all three, use the three-year-old features as the, you know, sort of the common thread recapping the weekend. Chase the Chaos. Reached out to Ed Mosier and hoped to get Ed on. Adam Ference and Bill Dory own this Pennsylvania bred on a Stern, and he's a gelding. Gets a free pass into the Preakness. Got an okay 83 buyer. Coming off an allowance win. And this is another local horse. And anxious to hear the story. El Camino Real Derby. Mile and an eighth, too. So, and if you watched it, Armando Ayuso. He's pretty excited. He stood up at the wire. And I tell you, this horse galloped out like the mile and a quarter or mile and three sixteenths, which will become the long-term goal, the Preakness, galloped out like that's going to be right in the wheelhouse. The mare was just a horse. She was a one-time winner in seven career starts. A jump start. Live the moment. So, we'll dive into the pedigrees with Sid on Wednesday. Gets us to the Withers in New York, and we've got some fun later in the week. I mean, I know we'll be in New Orleans and getting excited about the Risen Star card, but yesterday, the fur flew yesterday. You got an early pick five carryover on Friday, 285,000. Yeah, so races 1 through 5, and then, because you had some overlap into the back end of the card, you ended up with a pick six carryover, too. There's a $40,000 pick six carryover, races 3 through 8 on Friday, and of course, they're running no races Thursday. They're running no races for a while, actually, on Thursday. They have got the holiday Monday, don't forget. You've got President's Day. So they're going to run Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. But I haven't looked at the sequence, but I'm sure Andy's already handicapped. We'll talk tomorrow to Andy and, of course, Mig in a little bit. But on Saturday in New York, first of all, Jim Chapman, congratulations to him and partner Stuart Tsujimoto. The Woodford-bred Violence Colt, Drew's Gold, early on the card. Third career start, he's 3 for 3. Drew's Gold, $25,000 Keeneland yearling. So great. Jim Chapman does a good job, and especially good with sprinters. And this is a horse that's going to focus on sprinting. Came in hot, too. Had waltzed in with a pair of bullets for Chapman. Wins the Jimmy Wingfield early on the card. Well, then things built up to the Withers, and I guess everybody just loves to, you know, the assume that these mile and an eighth races from the Remsen on are somehow tainted. There was nothing wrong with this race. Hit show, terrific. Brad Cox will join us, as I said, 11:30. And Arctic Arrogance, another second. Arctic Arrogance just keeps grinding it out. He's very solid. This is a horse that's never been worse than second. Now in what, six starts, two wins at the Sleepy Hollow and the maiden win, but second in the Remsen, second in the Jerome, second in the Withers. The three different horses. Very solid. And Linda Rice, thinking maybe Gotham, maybe kind of dial back a little bit. His punch just seems, like, the elongated distance just a tiny bit, at least for now, seemingly outside his sweet spot. Meanwhile, Gary and Mary West, who had a very big weekend. Brad also was, where did I see it? At Oaklawn, I think. Oaklawn? Maiden winner? It was a good maiden winner? There's a couple of notable maiden winners that may have gone under the radar. I'm sure we'll get to. But Hit Show takes over with about an eighth and drew off. Very nice performance, and some people hate any discussion of gallop outs. Well, this wasn't a question of a horse galloping out, finishing second or third, and he galloped out past everybody. Hit Show just kept going, and clearly, much like Chase the Chaos in the El Camino, Hit Show. That's a horse that wants every bit of 10 panels. And, of course, this is Candy Ride out of the wonderful Tappet Mare Actress for the Wests. And undoubtedly, Wednesday, when we circle around to this recap, Sid's already even touched on Hit Show and the mating of Actress with Candy Ride. So, always happy to see Gary West, who puts a lot in, and comes up with what looks to be, and the Brad Cox barn, yikes. With all due respect to the nice horses that have already won some things for Baffert, Brad Cox has got the heavy hand, and they're gonna keep coming these next few weekends. Fairgrounds, of course, first and foremost, the Risen Star, Angel of Empire for the Albaz, Tappet's Conquest for La Penta, and Victory Formation. The three of them. Saturday in the Risen Star. And then there's Instant Coffee. There's Anxious to Hear About Slip Mahoney. Al Gold's 2 3-year-olds. There's a lot going on. Cox has also got Chop Chop coming back Saturday. She's in the Rachel. So we'll get an update. And a lot more. Cox is all over the place. He's got West Willpower for the Wests in the Razorback. Tawny Port makes a return. Speaking of 4-year-olds that are coming back. So, yeah. We'll talk to Brad in a little bit. A couple of hours. That was the New York Saturday action, and that's the majority. A few other spots. Huge upset at Tampa at Turfway. Ron Kales. BG Warrior at what? What was that horse? 40, 35, 40 to 1? 42 to 1. Paid 85.76 and wired the field. And you go look at, that's what's so fun about Turfway. You go look at these, you look at the fields afterward and you say, well, it wasn't, shouldn't, that horse could have been half that price. the third of that price. There was nothing wrong with BG Warrior in that spot. A runaway and hide filly. David Halder aboard. I mean, that the race two back, it's crazy. The horse had won a stake, right? What stake? Yeah, won the Go Well. I mean, was put back to second, but I mean, the performance was still the performance. How does this horse go off as the second longest price on the board? This is crazy. Absolutely crazy. So congratulations, owner Keith Grass. Runaway and Hide out of an Any Given Saturday filly. Biagio's Gift. If I had to make a guess, I'm going to say that was a New York bred, right? Biagio's Gift. So, yeah, just slip that. Turfway. You better eat your Wheaties. That's Brad Cox won there too, actually, because I'd pulled together. There was a very good allowance that seventh race too. We'll get some of the results from the team. I mentioned some maiden performances. If you didn't see the effort from Saturday early on the card at Gulfstream, I don't even know why this was on, but it was. And it caught my eye. The Good Magic, Gold Magic, Kevin Attard for the Old Wellings. Very nice debut. Got a big fig. That's an Ontario bred. Keep an eye. Yeah. That just caught my eye. So plenty. There's so much else to discuss. Santa Anita and the Coast to Coast was tricky. Did have a nice, for those of you that follow the action that I write up, I don't do what I did Saturday all that often, making a specific suggested play, but I was absolutely, I just had one of those horses that jump off the page at you. You know how I say that quite a bit. You know, looked like a beach ball, quote unquote, as we say, in the stake. And yes, the Manhattan Jungle looked like the obvious, horse to beat, and she wins. But Ragtime Rose was the horse that really, to me, had the Rick Hammerly scenario, the cutback. From a mile, and came running, could not get to the winner, but did key a really juicy try. So I put together that 2x1x3, and then 3x2x1 offering, and that sort of closed out the day really nicely on Saturday. So that was all right. It was fun. It was a fun day. Had some good ideas. Had a couple of nice priced results that sort of carried the day. Couldn't get the multis home, but that'll happen. That's the big challenge. But I thought it was a very satisfying, and believe me, I absolutely needed a distraction, waiting for last night. Should mention too, there's going to be a whole, I imagine, I don't know how much more of a, we'll see how much more of a hubbub there is, but you did have that horse go bad. Decorated My Life, the Simon Callahan, and then of course everybody that imagines themselves to be an expert on on physical properties of horses, I would yield in this case to Joe Bravo, who is okay. Joe Bravo has gotten on a lot of horses. Joe Bravo didn't, warming up and so forth. It's awfully easy after the fact for people to say. California's been ultra vigilant at every juncture. So I mean, there's going to be the idea that there's never going to be a horse that gets critically injured, you know, ever again is just ridiculous. It's just it's an impossible standard that we all live with. Just a reality. I know people don't may not want to hear it, but that's just fact. Sorry. Feel badly. Don Little Jr. is going to join us, and I'm looking forward to it. It's always fun to talk to him, especially after a steak win. And
yes.
There he is, Don Little Jr. Good morning, Joe.
As I said in the interview after the race, it was the sun was shining in Tampa, even though it was raining, raining like the dad used to. Actually, Dad said that after we won the Belmont. That was a sort of a memory that, you know, those are the ones you don't forget, and I'm sure he was watching from above.
I love it. And, of course, Centennial Farm, that's had such a great history. And this horse, one of the reasons I reached out to you, Don, today is because we had Todd last Tuesday, and, you know, he made it very clear. He knows what kind of a horse it is going to take to Tampa. It's not a surface for everybody. He's now won that race 7 times, and he felt it was the timing was good, and off you went, and you see the result.
Yeah, no, it was that's the one thing, sort of a little bit, I guess you could say, of a home field advantage, even though it's not stabled there. But you know, having experience there numerous times, and I would say played to our advantage a little bit, and it worked out nicely. And you know, this horse, for only his third start, has run on 3 different racetracks. He's been competitive in all the races. Gives you an idea how versatile he is. And my oldest son said to me on the other morning after the race, and he said, you know, Dad, for his third start, he checked off a lot of boxes that a lot of horses don't check off, you know, in a short period of time. So it's encouraging.
Well, and that's what you're looking for at this time of year. And, you know, famously, you guys, we don't think of Centennial as a precocity factory.
Absolutely not. Preservationist winning grade ones at age 6. We'll take it.
That's kind of a hallmark, patience. And, if Todd, it's not like you're picking up the phone and saying, Todd, you can live. What do you think about litigating the Sam Davis? Do you think should we go over there? Talk about this horse and the acquisition and the development and everything that went into even getting him to this point.
Well, Steve, as you said, we're not a, precocious organization. And that just goes to the people and the team that Dad put together and we've kept together really for 41 years. And we're all horse people, and we grew up on horses' backs, and that just goes to, translates into doing what's right for the animal. And, if you look at this horse's pedigree, where we try to find value is in the first dam. We're not looking for a dam that's had a great production record as of yet, and we're hoping our horse fills in that generation. And, you look at this horse third dam on, you've got Oscillate Dance numbers, the Phipps family deep, deep, deep. So if our horses that we select fill in that first dam, they're valuable staying prospects. And this would be, if he goes off and continues to do well, and Matthias just said, that'll be our 15th stallion we've placed.
Wow.
in markets, whether it be not just Kentucky, but regional markets abroad, just to be able to stand them and have somebody take a chance to stand them at stud, that says a lot to the team and the way we approach it.
In terms of picking this one out, this was a Keeneland Yearling, book 2?
Yes, he was actually, book 2. Yep, 5'21", and you know, he had a great pedigree. We looked, you know, and we knew that the cross worked because he had blamed in the second dam. Arch has been great to us, i.e. preservationist.
Yep.
It just was, and again, you know, when we put these partnerships together in September in particular, you know, our partnerships, I mean, we do individual horses, but mostly the big partnership is multiple horses. And yet, you know, you sort of go through the motions and stick to a budget. And, you know, because we try to get four every year, and you know, things fall into place. And like anything, you just got to be patient, and he worked out perfectly. He was precocious right from the beginning, and he's got two stable mates. One's with Jimmy, and another one that we're undecided to where he'll go. But it's a nice group of horses, and we've got some nice ones behind it, and we've had a lot of nice ones before it. So.
$370,000, and that makes me wonder. And when you talk about the budget and the wheelhouse, I mean, one of the conversations that has come up, you know, particularly around the sales season, whether it's the yearling market or the 2 year old in training, depending on, you know, approach and philosophy. But I mean, how much has the pressure, you know, particularly for, you know, for stallion pedigrees, I mean, this has probably been the number one conversation, you know, the last several years. I mean, between what Viola and Rapoli are doing, Mike Ryan and the SF team, and now Liz Crowe and Brad Wiseboard and Brad Cox with their stallion searches. How much pressure is it put on you, and how, you know, how has Centennial, how has it affected your approach?
Well, Steve, you know, we've kind of always had the same approach of haven't really varied too much. You know, we've been through the ups and downs of the market. We were here when Coolmore and Sheikh Mohammed decided to come to Kentucky, and, you know, 2008 market difficulties. And you know, we look at the average price that gives people the best opportunity to have a chance without being too deep into it from the beginning. And, you know, statistically, if you look at the stock market and the thoroughbred market, there is a very close correlation with a lag time of about 6 to 8 months. And we tend to just figure in the budget. Like last year's, our average was 330. The year before that, it was a little, you know, 30% less. And you just got to be patient with it. Yeah, we know we're going to be bidding against, you know, the SF bloodstocks and the Rapolis and things like that. And, you know, that's what makes the game and the market strong. And, you know, you can't, you know, there's been times in bad years where you second guess yourself, but we're not the type of organization that's going to second guess what we've, you know, done in the past. The record's there, and,
sure,
and we're going to stick to the team that made us and got us there with Dr. Carr and Paula Parsons. And, you know, it's just been a great go. And, you know, again, the key word is patience, and you guys just got to have it. And again, going back to the horse connections, you know, I played polo, Dr. Carr played polo. Polo is a show jumper. And we know that the best thing you can do is just, if something's not right, you just got to give them some time. And, you know, you kind of know early on if it's worth the time and the effort or you know, the horse's lifespan in racing is very small compared to his whole lifespan. So you got to do the best you can to get him there and give every opportunity to be successful. As I said, we had a speaker series here at the Polo Club that we started. We had Michael Matz last week. We've got Laura Kraut next week. We've got Adolfo Cambiasso 2 weeks after that. You know, people from different horse venues. And it's been quite successful. And you know, the one commonplace is everyone that looks like a grade one winner isn't always a grade one winner. And, you know, you just got to be patient with it.
Well, litigate comes out of this graded stake winner. Third career start. What I saw, you know, Todd's comments. What's your initial reaction here about you know, going back for Tampa Bay Derby or looking at something else?
You know, that's his call, and you know, we're not even going to think about anything for the next couple of weeks. See how he settles back down and gets back into a groove in this training regime in the morning. And you know, Todd has a lot of other individuals that look very attractive as well. So you know, we'll let his management team and himself figure out what's the best course of action. And we'll see where we go next. I really don't have a comment on where we would think of going next, or because that conversation really isn't going to come into play when, you know, for another couple of weeks. And my father always used to say, he says, I remember when I used to make up hats before a big race for horses. And he says, I don't do that anymore. I wait till after they win, then I'll make the hats. So that's sort of how we go about it. But, you know, for partners in the partnership, especially those that are experiencing it for the first time, it's a lesson in life, I guess. You know, you got to calm them down, but you also got to be realistic, but you also got to be very excited to be in a position that we're in.
Exactly. And you know, you talk about that track record, you know, that speaks for itself. And you mentioned preservationist, the rocketry, you know, kind of found his own niche, you know, as a distance runner, a unified, and the fun with Wicked Strong, I mean, Corinthian, on and on.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, even look at Rubiano. You know, he wasn't successful, or he won the Eclipse Award when he was a 5-year-old, and you know, that's a great testament to the team and as well, because you know, We see building an equity in a stallion prospect, you know, having him run and be competitive in races as a 4- and 5-year-old. You know, the side gives you the soundness, you know, background there, and breeders like to see that.
Let me check in on, you mentioned a couple of stable mates and some with Jimmy and and of course obviously with Todd. Give us a little quick stable tour while we got you.
Yeah, right now Todd has he's actually an older horse. He's a maiden, and talk about patience. He just turned 4, but he's a half brother to Dynamic One by Honor Code that we think a lot of. And then Jimmy's got 2 in particular, one by the name of Escalation, who was, if he wasn't the most expensive violence, he was the second most expensive violence. We paid $550 for him. But he is, in my opinion, a preservationist type. He is, I mean, he's just gorgeous, does everything right, has a ton of talent. He's about a month away. And then, of course, Timaeus, that we don't buy a lot of 2-year-olds, but this one, the pedigree stuck out in particular because it's the same family as Preservationist, and he's by Malibu Moon. And he's a gorgeous chestnut. He's about the same. He's with Jimmy, and he's about the same time frame. And we bought some nice yearlings now, 2-year-olds, and, you know, we're going to probably look at the Keeneland, the new Keeneland offering here with those individuals, and maybe look at the 2-year-old sale. But, you know, all of our best horses, Steve, come from the yearling sale and have gone through our training process at our farm in Middleburg, Virginia, which, you know, has been the key to the success, I believe. And now with the Virginia residency program, that helps out, pay a few bills when you win a race too, getting a little extra money.
Well, that's a big 6 months before they turn 2, and it is a you know, we were championing this all through the difficult period that you know, Virginia Equine Alliance and everything, you know, Deb Easter and the team. It was such a smart, it was such a clever gambit, and you know, now you got farms that have reopened and training centers. Every you talk about Middleburg, you know, I sort of had a finger on the pulse just because of my relationship with Woodbury Payne, and then Wood's got a waiting list. I mean, you know, not that he didn't always fill up, but I mean, he's got people, you know, begging to take you know, their young horse to develop them.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been a great thing, and again, kudos to them. You know, like you said, Debbie Easter and all that. And, because we've got two blends on our farm, and you know, Centennial has priority, but we take in other horses as well. I mean, and we're full. And you think that, you know, not only the Centennial horses that have been broken and trained there, Gulf Virgin was broken and trained there. You know, Donnerail Court was broken and trained there.
Wow.
You know, Nick Zito, he sent a lot of his young horses there years ago, and it's been it's a great area and a great horse community to, you know, break young horses. Yeah, you might miss a few days because of the weather, but you know, my belief is that's okay.
Yeah.
They're still babies, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You miss a few days. Any athlete needs an off season.
Well, and for those that don't know the name, tell everybody about Paula Parsons. I mean, she's been there forever.
Yeah, Paula started, and Dr. Connor, they both started with us in 1983 or four.
Wow.
I think it was.
Wow.
And again, we've been together. I mean, my senior project in high school, I worked with Dr. Carr at the Aiken Training Center in the mornings. And then, would sort of go do my hobby in the afternoon of polo. So it was a pretty nice, you know, it was great education. And being at the Aiken Training Center back in the 70s, late 70s, it was pretty active with some pretty nice stables there. Green Tree, Phipps's, you know, Paul Mellon. And I mean, it was a great.
The opportunities, Centennial Farms.com, for those that have never visited. And Don, do you do any turnarounds? Do you do any pinhooking type groups?
No, to be honest, we tried. I will be honest. You know, Dad was always game for trying something a little new, but you know, it just came down to, you know, finding a niche in this game. And you know, when the tax laws changed in 86, we were doing primarily fillies before that because, you know, anybody was investing in any LLCs, limited partnerships rather, and not caring what the underlying asset was. So we figured we'd try a pinhooking thing, but it just, you know, it didn't work out. We bought some broodmares one time and did a breeding partnership. And of course, we sold a yearling by Pleasant Colony that brought $1 million, and my father said, "Oh, this is easy." Well, guess what? That was it. I think he thought it was a good idea to go buy four or five more, and then out of them hit. I mean, it was a complete bust. But you know, it's one of those things you live and learn, and just back to when the tax laws changed, it was like, well, we got to do something, and then I decided to do this full time. And we switched from fillies to colts because we felt that was, you know, because the tax advantages were gone. And everybody says, well, if you won the Derby and, you know, then you can do, the only way was with colts. And the first colt partnership we did had Colonial Affair in it. And so we kind of just figured that was a good thing to do, and we stuck with it. And, you know, Dr. Carr and Paula, like I said, have been with me for 38 years, and you know, a lot can be said about loyalty and sticking with your guns, and you know, you can make a few little adjustments here and there, but you know, if you stick to your foundation that's been successful, you know, it will continue on.
Well, and that's exactly what it has done. And of course, the familiar jacket in a game where, you know, certain imagery can come and go. The silks are one of the things that, you know, kind of provide a certain continuity, and you know, the familiar scarlet sash and the beige jacket, obviously the longevity speaks for itself.
Yeah, no, and you know, you got to be proud of everybody involved, and you know, again, it's been a great team, but again, the most important is the great partners we've had over the years, and you know, educated some that have gone off on their own, and
sure,
have ones that have been with me since 1989.
I love it.
So, you know, it's a great game, and you know, anybody that's considering it, you know, do your due diligence. There's many ways to get involved, and you know, seeing your horse in the lead at the eighth pole, whether it be a claimer or a nice grade three in Tampa, it, you know, it's a pretty exciting feeling, especially because you have no control over it.
Exactly. It feels
totally out of your hands.
It really is.
In a jockey, and you can say, well, it's in the jockey's hands, and sometimes it's not in their hands either.
No. There's, what do they say? There's a million ways to lose and one way to win, or something along those lines. Well, and done plenty of it at the highest level. Don Little Jr., Centennial Farms. All the information, centennialfarms.com, if you want. There's a handful of offerings, some of the babies that are being developed. Get in touch with Don. You'll have fun, and you couldn't be in better hands. Don, thank you so much. Congratulations.
Steve, always a pleasure, and have a wonderful day. And as old Harvey said, may the horse be with you.
There it is. Well, there's a horse now. It's Litigate, and nothing springs eternal more than a good three-year-old that gets everybody's juices flowing.
You got that right.
Don Little Jr., everybody, and we'll see Don on the road, and what a pleasure. One of the really nice gentlemen, and, of course, his dad, just a... You know, one along with Cott Campbell. I mean, really, came not long after Cott, and you know, has had, you know, a sustained period of success on just a regular basis, and of course had one of the craziest horses, had one of the nuttier horses out there ever when it came to Corinthian. Holy cow! Was that, was he a maniac, right? Did you ever, who was around for Corinthian? Casey, let's head to the break. Mig is going to be next, and we'll go over a variety of things with him. Dave Hill's going to join us. We'll get Dave while Super Bowl results are fresh in his mind, and he can really take a bow because he had just a fabulous season for us. And, I still got to figure out. Still got to figure out how to get Dave, you know, plugged in for something else, right? What else? Let's see what he's going to do. He's got to keep himself busy now. After how many months? 5 months. We'll see what he's working on. It'll be the opportunity. Also ahead, of course, John White. It is Monday, so we'll talk to John. We got to go over the future wager results. A couple of heavily bet horses that seem kind of aggressive. Get to that. Brad Cox has mentioned. What else we got? I think, and Ed Mosier is going to join us too. All right. So here's your Monday. Sunday recap. Got a couple of minutes here before we, got a little bit of time here. Let me see. I've got a video back. Oakhorn. First of all, terrific. It's kind of a funny, on Friday, those of you that cashed with the Thorograph, winning with Thorograph. Good job by Vic Stauffer with Royal King, who wired that field at 7-2. Paid a nice 880. One of the horses he mentioned finished third, I know, but the horse I thought that he was focused on was B-Sud that scratched. So I didn't really look at the ninth, but I know that I think Amongst Friends was one of the ones that he with the pointed to. So we'll continue to try to give you good ideas with Thorograph and teach you how to use it. And there were a few Thorograph